Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the roundtable for this second day of December. You made it through the first day of the last month of the year, so on to the second day. Good morning, everyone. Welcome. Hopefully you are in a good mood. It's a kind of a gray day, a misty, sprinkly day, dark. But, you know, maybe it'll improve. I don't know.
That makes it sound wonderful, doesn't it?
Well, no, it doesn't. I didn't think it was at all nice. But that's all right. But we'll make it nice. We'll be the ray of sunshine.
Oh, man. We'll see.
Well, this would, had I not done the other stuff, this is where I could make the perfect transition to say, speaking of rays of sunshine, Alan Chartok is here.
You are so right. I looked up, and it is a little dink and dank here, but Judy, I looked up Fire Island this morning. It's looking a little better out there.
Yeah.
Judy has taken Rosemary's place when it comes to condemning Fire Island remarks.
I don't think you were condemning it, right? You just didn't know it had such a presence?
No, I have proposed a new rule on the Media Project where we can only have one Fire Island reference per show.
I have.
And we exceeded it this week.
I'm going to the president of WAMC. I'm going to complain.
Well, you might notice Alan's got a few stitches now because his corner men had to stitch him up. He came back in the fight. He did. He held his own, but he got hit a couple of times.
During the Media Project.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, it's
right, Joe. Well.
Well, you know, yeah. It's good to hear that you're here. That's the important part. You're here. All right. Let's go right now. The weather on Fire Island. It's 54 degrees. The wind is south at 14 miles per hour with 79% humidity.
All right, so, and that's the one reference for today.
Yeah. There you go. Just want to give you the.
And the rain doesn't put out the fire.
Good point.
Yes. Yeah.
Good point, Ira. All right. Welcome to the program. We welcome you to join us and to be part of our conversation. We have a lot to talk about. We had an abbreviated program yesterday, so we have all kinds of things to catch up with. We have a wonderful group assembled, so let's get started. Alan Chartok, good morning. Nice to have you here, as always.
Nice to be here, Joe.
Ira Fussfeld is with us, publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman, fresh from a taping of the Media Project. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Joe, and everyone. Nice to be back.
Very nice to have you back. Judy Patrick is here, vice president for editorial development at the New York Press Association. Judy, good morning. How are you?
I am wonderful. It is great to be here.
I just want just
she's tough.
Yeah, well, what do you mean she's tough?
She's tough. I find her to be confrontational.
Because she gives it to you?
Yes.
Yeah, all right. Well.
Confrontational, difficult.
Difficult.
Accurate.
Vericarious Kelly joins us as well. She's on the telephone, and we are thrilled that she's with us. Siena College Professor of Comparative Politics. Good morning, Vera. How are you?
It's great to be on the telephone because I'm around students who just returned from, Thanksgiving break, and I think a lot of them are at least showing signs of cold, may I hope?
Yeah, let's just hope it's a cold.
Yeah.
We'll get into this later, but you know the numbers aren't great, and they're not great here in Albany County. They're not here in many parts of the state. Another big story that we'll get into a little bit later, of course, is that Omicron has been detected in the United States of America. It was only a matter of days. It was yesterday, coming from the state of California. So we'll get into that a little bit later on. When we last left you yesterday, we were talking about the Supreme Court of the United States of America. They were hearing arguments in an abortion case that could overturn Roe versus Wade or severely gut it. We played the audio here on WAMC for 2 hours or so, and it was, I must say, it was fascinating listening. I don't know that I've listened to a full case be argued before the Supreme Court, and I found it just to be really riveting.
Right. They're human beings. It turns out they may not be nice, but they're human beings.
Well, it had less protocol
exactly.
than I expected. It's
exactly.
a little more down and dirty, and they're just, I mean, not. I don't mean underhanded, but just, you know, they're scrappy, and they make little side comments, and they're sort of nudging each other, and I don't know. I found it to be fascinating. Well, anyway, Here's the takedown. The Supreme...
Can I say one more thing?
Of course.
And that was that, you know, I listened. I listened on the way home from WAMC to Great Barrington.
Fire Island.
No. Now you just broke Judy's rule. I listened, and then I went home, and I said, let's take a look at how they're covering it on television. Guess what?
They weren't.
Now, can you imagine, as informative and as enlightening as you guys say it was listening to it, can you imagine how much more had it been on television?
Well, it wasn't.
Well, and they don't
agree with that.
And they don't offer the video, so they would have had to just offer the video and or audio, rather, and just show
put
you
their faces
like,
up.
Paintings or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's you know, a win for radio, right?
Right, so exactly, because they won't let the television do it. It's just one of those things.
And the reason we got the audio was because of COVID and not the transcripts. Instead, we just get the audio. So I find it to be, you know, it was fascinating.
But it says so much about what WAMC can do and does do. You know what I mean? I mean, I know somebody in this room might be wanting to push the self-serving button, Judy, but I reject that. I think it's unbelievable because they won't allow pictures to be taken of, which they ought to, of course, and that we're left with a tremendous win for the radio station.
As someone who listened to the arguments on WAMC yesterday, I wanted to thank you for doing that because it wasn't something I could find on television. There were some newspapers that were broadcasting the audio live,
yeah.
But in terms of portability and being able to listen uninterrupted, the radio was the way to go.
And I was glad NPR, at least about 45 minutes into it, started to identify the justices.
Yeah,
they didn't
helpful.
At the beginning, and I'm like, who's
well,
this? Gorsuch?
I didn't listen to yesterday's, but I've heard other circumstances that have been covered by NPR, and I don't know what they can do, because if they talk over the speaker to
that's
identify
right.
the speaker, then you can't hear the speaker.
Yeah, well, that's you're
yeah,
right,
but for
Ira.
4 seconds, you can just say Audie Cornish can come in, anyway, which she did. After later on, she said, "No, this is Neil Gorsuch and addressing a question
to
Elena Kagan."
Is. You don't even have to say this is Joe. All you have to say
it's fine.
Is Neil Gorsuch.
And by the way, I thought they did a great job covering it when
well,
they got
and
it.
And again,
we
skim over it. It's not on television. Why is it not on television? What is it about the Supreme Court that makes it unique for in this circumstance?
It's a great question because it is certainly it's open to the public. As anyone knows who has gone to D.C., you can get a ticket. You can stay all day. You can go in increments. So it is open to the public. There's no reason that it couldn't be, but I don't know. I'm sure they have their reasons. But
well, I mean, historically, before lowercase cases were allowed on TV, the working theory was that it would make the trials a circus and that the lawyers would be playing to the cameras, a la in the O.J. trial.
Hey, Vera, what do they do in Germany?
Yeah, we don't have hearings like that. Because they're considered, the way the Supreme Court does it here in this country, it's considered overly political, actually. So they have.
I knew you were going to say that in Germany it's better.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I don't think that. You know, the idea of having. Well, first of all, you know, we have a completely different tradition where we don't have, for example, juries. We have legal experts hearing a case and requesting additional information. So it's a completely different system, and it I find it very difficult, for example, to explain to my German friends what happened in the Rittenhouse case. You know, those
oh,
kinds of questions
luck.
Come up all the time. People don't understand, but also the sort of, you know, question back and forth at the Supreme Court level, people find it interesting, but they also think it's very strange that there are these, instead of being legal experts, they have these right-wing and left-wing interpretations, and that is confusing to people.
Try to explain to people why Bill Cosby got out of jail. I mean, you know, you just these things are hard to explain. So what happened yesterday with the Supreme Court? They seemed poised on Wednesday to uphold a Mississippi law that bans abortions after 15 weeks of pregnancy in what would be a momentous and polarizing decision to roll back the abortion rights that the court had defined over the past half century. During sometimes tense and heated questioning and almost 2 hours of oral arguments, the court's 6 conservative justices signaled they are comfortable with the Mississippi law, even though upholding it would be flatly at odds with Roe v. Wade, the 1973 decision that established a constitutional right to abortion and prohibited states from banning the procedure before fetal viability currently around 23 weeks. We heard a lot about the word viability yesterday. Moving that line to 15 weeks would discard decades of precedent. Several of the conservative justices appeared ready to go further and overrule Roe entirely, letting states decide whether and when to ban abortions, an outcome that would transform regulation of abortion in 20 or more states that have been seeking to impose more restrictions, and that would further inflame the long-running political and cultural divisions over this issue. That from the New York Times. Alan.
Well, look, I think this is one of the worst things that has ever happened in the United States. You know, we have been fighting for women's rights for years and years, and this just takes it all and throws it away and says, we men, we old generally white men will decide for all womankind what they can or can't do with their bodies. I think this is one of the worst things that we have ever seen in this country, with the possible exception of the election of Donald Trump. And, you know, we've all been worried about it, and we have had reason to worry about it. Now, there have been some changes. Now there are pills. There are basically abortion pills. But I heard on the radio this morning coming in that they're going to ban taking those pills too in some jurisdictions. It is the most reprehensible thing. I've been worried about it for years, and now my worst worries have come true.
Yeah, the die's cast on this one. I think it's wishful thinking for any pro-choice advocates to think that the court's going to do anything other than gut Roe versus Wade. And I think rather than just wring your hands and say, oh, this was a bad decision or this is coming, and we, I think people who are in favor of women's right to choose need to start thinking politically. They need to start they need a plan going forward, because this is going to happen.
Well, what would you do about it? I mean, you say they've got to do something about it.
Well, in the words of Brett Kavanaugh says, well, the court needs to be neutral on this. We need to send this back to the states. They need to decide, because
right.
God forbid.
The states or Congress?
right. And, you know, Susan Collins, who really believed Brett Kavanaugh when he said that he believed that Roe v. Wade was settled law. Susan Collins last night is coming out with a proposal to put this before Congress. Well, what do you think the chances of that going through? It's not going to happen. So what can they do? It needs to be fought state by state. Elect people to, if truly 70% of the American public believe that this should be a right for women, then they need to be mobilized and vote people into office that will pass laws in each state that will uphold the women's
so
rights.
So 70%, isn't that an interesting number? Because we don't see it being reflected in elections in some of the red states, that's for sure. So do people have bipartite minds in which they say, okay, I can vote for Donald Trump, who started all of this, but this is terrible what they're doing on abortion?
90 seconds.
I think people who anti-abortion people are far more motivated than people who support a woman's right to choose, and that needs to be changed. That's as simple as that. I mean, women need to mobilize.
And if the polls are accurate, the poll I heard yesterday was that only 8% of the people in this country flat out are in favor of banning abortions.
Interesting.
That the
what was the number? I'm sorry.
Eight. There was a split at the top, but it was cumulatively over 50% are approve of abortions, or some with some minor tweaks, but the life of the mother, you know, that sort of thing, and much less than that.
In addition,
No, go ahead. I only have 30 seconds for it, but I promise we'll come right back to you.
I wanted to say one of the things that Judy was mentioning is activism, right? In addition to being politically engaged, I think it comes down to the following. If, in fact, we have a return to, you know, an 8-week lowering of the viability, fetal viability to 8 weeks earlier, you know, something like 15 weeks or along those lines, we know that women will engage in abortions. They will be unsafe abortions. It will, whatever the ruling is, it will not change how women deal with unexpected, unwanted, or unsafe pregnancies for themselves. So if they can't find medical advice or medical help or assistance, we will go back to the stories of horror that we had before. And once those become public,
I got to pause you there, Vera.
I'm sorry. Make a big difference.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Shartok, Judy Patrick, Ira Fussfeld, and Vera Karius-Kelly. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. And we, let's see, I want to, Vera, anything else you wanted to say on that? I had to cut you off. I apologize.
No, it was just the fact that people right now, I noticed that among my students, they don't really think about the issue of unsafe abortions or termination of pregnancy by people who lack actual medical skills, or they do it in environments that are unsafe. So that is a reality that will not go away. It's sort of this discussion that we have politically, you know, about the Supreme Court, but what in fact will happen for women who don't have access to the means to travel out of country or, you know, access services in another way, this is a reality that we might return to, and that's truly frightening, because that is something that has, you know, it shocks the conscience when we know what the consequences can be. And that is what I think a lot of people should start thinking about, in addition to Judy's issue of bringing it down to the state and local levels in terms of organizing politically, but also talking about, are we really going back to the past where we had very specific accounts of great suffering and loss of human life, of mothers, and incredible pain because of the inability to access safe abortion options? And that is something that we need to reflect on as well.
Well, you know, what troubles me, and there are a number of things that trouble me beyond the core issue of this abortion case. I agree with Judy. It appears that where we're headed is for grassroots and state level and voting and all of these kinds of things that are going to create angst on both sides of this issue. But not only that, but there are just so many issues in this divided country of ours. And I'm not suggesting that people be quiet about whatever point of view they have, but I am concerned that it's just like this country is constantly fighting with each other. And I don't know how that can be avoided, and I don't know what the end game is, because the rhetoric is entirely off the rails in many cases, and we see too many fears about gunplay and all of that kind of stuff. I just don't like where we are as a country right now, but I don't know that I could suggest an alternative.
Judy?
You know, I 20 minutes into this yesterday morning, I thought to myself, why are we even bothering to have oral arguments? They've made up their mind.
Yeah, we knew where they were going.
But I was surprised at how candid and frank they were. It's really, three of those justices, they want to overturn Roe, and it's very clear. And Roberts, the Chief Justice, doesn't really have a strong position to even offer a compromise. The best people are hoping for is some sort of compromise for 15 weeks, and that really essentially upholds the Mississippi law. It's it's, you know, my mother had six children, and she loved her children and loved being a mother, but she said there was nothing that made you feel more helpless than being rolled into being on a gurney and being rolled into the delivery room. It's just, you know, having a baby is not an easy thing, and it's something that stays with you. If you have five or six children, when you're an older lady, you're having problems as well. I mean, this is physically, it's a tough thing for women, too. Let's not forget that.
Alan? Were you going to say that?
Well, I was. I was so struck by Judy's good words that I, you know. No, one really does have to put themselves in the place of a woman who has to make these decisions. And that's what Judy was saying, and she's absolutely right about that. I fear, I'm with Ira on this, I fear for the country at this stage of the game.
And then maybe on that note, I can also mention Coney Barrett's comments on adoptions, right? Which, of course, is always a possibility, but her sort of framing of the opportunity for adoption makes it seem like there is no burden for any women to carry a child to term. It is, you know, inconsiderate of various health, age, and other conditions that might make it complicated for women to carry a child to term under certain conditions. And also her idea that once you give birth to a child, you can hand it over to a loving family. I mean, you know, 100,000 or 140,000 children a year are adopted within the United States. But traditionally, Americans have also looked abroad to adopt specific children. Well, during the COVID period, this has been reduced, obviously, and there are some serious concerns in many countries because it's been a money-making scheme for certain countries, and international adoption opportunities have been reduced. But in fact, when you look domestically, there are many, many tens of thousands of children every year that live with foster families that are never adopted. So, you know, we make a decision, possibly here at the Supreme Court level, that shapes the future of many, many, many children who are not desired and who will not be adopted. There's no guarantee that once you're born, you will be adopted and will have a good family to take care of you and a bright path in front of you.
We welcome your letters.
And I think...
Go ahead.
Yep. No, I just think this is one of those issues that we should think about as well. If we don't address the bureaucratic consequence of that, the care that needs to be given, the expense that comes with it. I mean, I shouldn't, you know, this is always a very grim sort of reality to speak about, but it is not a decision that is just made about giving birth. It is a commitment this society makes to 18 years at least of a young person's life.
We do have a lot of letters. Let me get to many of these. We welcome yours, panel at WAMC.org. Lynn writes, in addition to the current fear of women losing their abortion access, I'm really horrified by how the states are adding hugely punitive individual fines and punishments into the mix. Where is this angle coming from? Mm. Well, if you punish, then hopefully they won't do it from their point of view, right? Let's go to Sean, who says, as a Catholic, I am pro-life. How come the panel never discusses the baby's rights? Linda, I have two thoughts. Maybe the Catholic justices should recuse themselves. Secondly, if they want to overturn Roe, tie it to eliminating the death penalty. Amy checks in. Good morning, panel. Here's a crazy idea. Have the FDA designate birth control pills or any form of birth control and over-the-counter medication. It won't change the horror show that we're witnessing on the Supreme Court, but it would help thousands of women for whom birth control is not covered by insurance and is prohibitively expensive.
How about making it free? How about increasing subsidies for childcare? If you're really committed to women raising children and being mothers, why don't we help them a lot more than
But you know what's going to happen, right, Judy? Let's just say any of those ideas work out. You give them out free, you sell them cheaply in a drugstore. The state legislature, the same creeps who are doing this right now, are going to turn around and say, nothing doing. We'll put you in jail if you buy one or your drugstore and you sell it. We know that.
You know, I'm listening to Joe read those letters, and I'm flashing.
Oh, I have more.
I'm sure you do. Well, that's part of the point. I'm flashing back to when I was the editor of the Daily Freeman in the early 80s. And we would get letters galore on both sides of the abortion issue, pretty much saying exactly the same thing that those letters were saying. And at some point in time, we threw our hands up and said, we're not going to print any more abortion letters from either side. And we didn't do it for punitive reasons. We did it because there was nothing new that they were saying in these letters.
Was that the same... was it just that issue, or did you do it like on guns, too?
Well, we didn't need to. The mail was, remember, the early 80s was about 10 years after Roe. The arguments were still at a fever pitch. And as soon as you let through a letter about abortion from whichever side, the floodgates would open again. So, but the as I say, listening to these letters, and I'm hearing those letters read back to me all over again.
Well, let me get back to the floodgates. Here we go. We go to... Deborah, my husband and I are listening to your show. To be clear, we are both strongly pro-choice, but we recognize that the other side sees this as a moral issue in terms of what constitutes murder. We find it abhorrent that nobody on this panel has offered so much as lip service to this view held by millions of Americans.
Well, but I mean, at the same time, we also have to consider how we as in the society and we as members of a state support mothers who cannot afford those supporting those children. And we may have to pay mothers to stay home to take care of those children. And we may need to provide extensive financial assistance for those children to thrive in society. So if you look at it that way, I think it's deeply immoral, unethical to not support mothers and children that are then living lives that are below the poverty line or dealing with all kinds of additional challenges, be it emotional or physical. I think these are large questions and society needs to decide. You can't just decide about something related to the point of birth and then abandon.
Well, but you know that that's exactly what they're going to do. They're going to say no abortions,
well, I mean,
and we aren't
clear, right?
And you are not going to, and we are not going to give you any money to support all of those babies and people who come into the world.
Yeah.
You know that. You know how Republicans vote.
Yes. Well, I mean, I wouldn't say everyone, but mostly yes. I think this is a major concern because it is about controlling women's bodies and making certain social choices, but it is not about supporting children and mothers, and that is a fundamental flaw in all of these arguments.
So say you, but not them.
So is it a question of morality or is it a question of constitutionality? And I think that is what the Supreme Court is supposed to be considering. It's easy to get swept away by the vision of a cute little baby wrapped in, you know, bunting and, you know, giggling.
I believe it's swaddling clothes, but go ahead.
But it's a very highly charged emotional argument to make, and I understand that there are some people who believe that any abortion, there are some people who believe that contraception itself is immoral, but I don't believe that that morality that person espouses should be forced on other people who don't have the same set of morals.
Nancy writes, the anti-abortion choice crowd is voicing their religious beliefs, that in shouty caps, that the soul is the most important part of a person in place during ensoulment at conception. It's up to the majority of people who aren't determined to foist our religious beliefs on everyone to make them accept that they need to trust the God they claim to believe in to handle the moral consequences for the souls of innocents and the guilty among us. Mary says, what are the exceptions to abortion after 15 weeks in the Mississippi law? On contraception, Chris writes, right here in the Capital Region, RPI researchers are developing an antibody-based contraceptive that is a non-hormonal, hands-off one-shot, lasts for a year at least, and works in both men and women. Brenda, as an 80-year-old woman who remembers what it was like to have an illegal abortion, the gutting of Roe v. Wade is tantamount to slavery. Joe Biden has to expand the court. One more letter, we'll take a break. Patricia writes, my question, why is 15 weeks not sufficient time for a woman to have an abortion? According to the lawyer who argued for Mississippi, that is what would be law if the court supported Mississippi. It seems to me to be a fair compromise for those who want to limit abortions and those who want freedom to have an abortion at any time during their pregnancy. We'll hold there for a moment. We have many more letters. We'll continue with those, and we welcome yours. Panel at WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Judy Patrick. I don't know why I said it that way. Judy Patrick. Ira Fussfeld.
They're not booing. They're Judy.
Judy. And and Vera Carius Kelly. I was at the brewery the other day and met a guy, and he was nice enough for some reason to buy me a beer because he was there, and it was very nice. Then I got a letter from him later in the day, and he said, oh, my God,
I left the brewery. I was talking to you. I was talking to your brother. And then I went over and I saw this beautiful collection of trees. We have these
Everlasting Lights Christmas trees.
I was going to call them memory trees, but there you go. What are the Everlasting
Lights?
Everlasting Lights, and it's in the town park right next to Town Hall. And they went over to see them as it was getting dark. And Judy was there because Judy is
one of the organizers.
One of the organizers of this event, beautiful event in town. And the guy heard Judy's voice and just flipped out and wrote me a letter. Goes, "Oh my God, I met Judy Patrick."
He recognized me just by my voice.
I know. That's cool.
It can happen. It happens to me once in a while.
Yeah, it's very nice.
I'm going to ask you one more question.
Oh, good.
Just correct me if I'm wrong. In theory, is not the Supreme Court's role in this process to interpret the case based on whether or not it violates the Constitution?
That's part of it, right. And they did.
Okay, you're saying that's part of it. So I'm not going to – I don't want to pretend to be naive. I'm not. But the personal views of these justices – we know the ones that have just come in are anti-abortion or they're believed to be anti-abortion. That should not, in theory, play into any decision they make.
As I have said many times, should schmud.
Okay, but am I wrong about that?
Yeah,
they are supposed
it's
to.
It's not that you're not wrong. You may be a little naive.
Well, I really am asking it informatively. I mean,
yes,
they're
I
not
you.
Supposed to take their own view. They're supposed to interpret the Constitution.
Well, yeah, but you know.
Well, yeah.
The justices of the Supreme Court have been saying that's true all along, right?
So not just this court.
No. I mean, can you imagine being a rabid Republican with Justice Douglas and some of the others earlier in the day? You know that that's what they were saying. Mm-hmm. Now, to me, they were good. They were good people.
Right.
These are bad people.
Yeah.
All right. Back to the letters. We have a lot of them. Susan writes, "This is an issue much bigger than morality or choice. It is about controlling women and male legislators making decisions about women's bodies and their lives. Shame on Amy Coney Barrett for being a pawn in this game." Then we go to Melinda. "To all those who say abortion is murder, what do they say to all those children murdered every day in excessive gun violence in this country?"
Huh? I don't quite get that. You mean, it's true. We have too many guns in this country. Too many kids are being murdered. No question. So then what?
Well, they're not doing anything about that, but they're doing something about this.
I see.
Yeah, it's
okay.
A question about sanctity of life.
You know.
We protect children, unborn children, but we don't really take active steps to reduce school shootings or remove weapons from society in general. So the question of protecting life after birth is a serious one in this country.
Ellen writes, "According to Jewish law, the soul does not enter until the body emerges from the mother." That is from Ellen. John said the so-called pro-
That may be her Jewish law, but my Jewish law is not mine. And I have a relationship, as does every thinking person, with God, right? So don't tell me what Jewish law is, please.
Lindsay says, "There is nothing that exemplifies the misogyny in this country more than the discussion of abortion. No one likes abortion. It's never an easy decision to make. But for a country obsessed with freedom and individual rights, clearly this serious medical decision should be left to the woman who bears the consequences of that decision." Dina writes, "The irony that the red states are the ones challenging Roe is a new level of absurd. My body, my choice is a mantra they chant about masks and vaccines, meaning it's okay to infect your child, your parent, your coworker with a potentially lethal virus because it's about body autonomy. Where is the protection of precious human life factored into that? And then there are gun rights. The hypocrisy is infuriating." John says the so-called pro-life people don't care about life. They have forced birth fetish that they want to force all of the rest of us to participate in without our consent. Because if it wasn't a fetish and they actually cared about life, they do something about the post-birth abortions taking place in our schools, like the one earlier this week in Michigan. Michelle says, "I worked for a women's health provider from 1982 to 1993 as a pregnancy counselor. I counseled over 14,000 women and trust women and their medical providers to make these decisions without governmental interference. I also agree that you can stop abortion by making it legal. It just means more women die." Sandra writes, the impacts of someone walking away from a child after birth are long-lasting and can be detrimental. To think a woman can easily part with a child after carrying it to term is ridiculous. I have seen this play out with a family member who decided against terminating a pregnancy that was part of a very, very bad relationship. The father is not involved at all. She's angry and depressed, and it's impacting her care for the children that she has. Rona writes, Harvard professor Lawrence said that if Mississippi law is upheld, it would be the first time in our history where the Supreme Court would be taking rights away. All their laws have been to expand rights. Despicable. When some other countries are finally going to give this right to women, we are taking it away. Also, people interchange fetus for any stage of a pregnancy. We need to be clear about these terms regarding the emotional attachment to the issue. Even at the beginning stages, that would technically be called a fetus. It is far from the full-formed baby that the anti-abortion people want us to think. Going to this letter from Julius, to the Catholics and others who bring up the unborn baby's rights, are you actively working to ensure that the necessary universal health care, prenatal care, universal child care, and early childhood education is in place to actualize those rights when the baby is born? Why aren't you decrying the lack of universal health care and family support in this country? Alexis says, many, many children are going to suffer and die from climate change, as has already happened in the United States. As we've waged wars, these abortion arguments are politicized to distract from the need for swift and urgent action to stop petrochemical extraction. Don't people see that the same politicians writing these restrictive abortion laws are also to the fiercest guardians of the industrial oligarchies that are killing children and families? No, right?
Am I wrong that the statistically the number of legal abortions is way down?
That is the word.
You know, can I mention the argument that Brett Kavanaugh was making about the fact that this should be a state's decision, but, you know, a decision by each of the states to make? If that was the case, then we'd still have a segregated South, because there are some circumstances in which the states do not make decisions that uphold people's constitutional rights. And this is one where it seems like they're headed in that direction.
A few minutes for one or two more letters. Mitchell says, it seems to me that access to safe abortions becomes a class issue. If the laws change and a Republican senator's kid gets pregnant and requires an abortion, they will get it. It's almost like access to free and safe sex is only for those with money. Republicans are masking this as a moral issue, but they just want to punish poor people. Denise writes, for those who believe adoption is a good alternative to abortion, we need to remember there are already hundreds of unadopted children who live in institutions now called children's homes. Perhaps we need to return to the term orphanage so people can realize there are still many, many orphans who need adopting. Rob says, good morning, panel. For the listener who wrote identifying him or herself as a Catholic and asking why the panel isn't representing the Catholic stance on abortion, I, as an American, want to remind this listener that we live in a constitutionally secular nation, not a Catholic theocracy. Also, we go to Marion. Healthy white babies are in demand and will be adopted. There aren't enough adoptive families for babies of color and babies with health problems. How does a woman abandon a baby to adoption if they don't expect the baby to find a home? Do the pro-life people have a plan for all the unadopted children? Elena says, how is it that men are not entered into the equation? If the powers that be want to declare life at conception, why aren't men held accountable for child support from that moment on? John says, what Roe v. Wade is at bottom is a balancing of interests. The decision tried to protect two legitimate interests. I can't help thinking that reasonable people should be able to see that. Viability is the right of demarcation generally, and science has moved it marginally closer to conception than the law should change with it. Right? Question mark. 15 weeks sounds too early, but 22 to 24 may now be too late. And one more letter, and then we'll take a break. Amy Barrett was particularly offensive and insulting to women with her comment about choosing adoption if parenting would be a burden, with a clueless, simple-minded statement from a clueless woman. We'll pause there. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We'll continue right after this. Thursday morning, December 2nd, here on the Roundtable on our panel discussion. Good morning, 8 minutes past the hour of 10 o'clock. Alan Chartok, Judy Patrick, Vera Akarios-Kelly, and Ira Fussfeld. We got a lot of letters. I think we've gotten sort of the major points, and we certainly will not get to every letter. We can't get to every letter, or we'd only be reading letters. But I think we've gotten to many of the different sides, different points. And so I just want to move the discussion a little bit, just slightly. We're still going to be talking about the decision and what's happening, but let's go on the political angle, which is what impact could this have on the midterms? The potential collapse of Roe shakes up political landscape. That is a headline in the Washington Post. The volatile issue of abortion catapulted to the center of the political debate Wednesday after the Supreme Court signaled it would uphold a law undermining Roe v. Wade, creating the potential for the polarizing matter to reshape the electoral battlefield. Democrats immediately signaled they would aim to make abortion rights a central focus in next year's midterm elections, where their prospects have been viewed as dim, while many Republicans sought to keep the focus on inflation and other problems facing President Biden. Alan Chartok, as a political scientist, do you believe that the creating of this potential for the polarizing matter could reshape the electoral battlefield?
Well, I've been wrong before, that's for sure. But I think it will. Look, there are a lot of women in this country. There are women who have daughters. There are women who have sisters. There are grandchildren, grandmothers. You know, I think this is a true woman's issue. Now, I think men can oppress women. And as a result of that, I think there may be a little bit of a secret kind of, intention here. A woman walks into a voting booth and she hears all the rhetoric in South Carolina or, you know, in one of those places, Mississippi. But she says, I'll be damned if I'm going to let this stand. And she votes if the Democrats are smart enough to capitalize on it. So I think it could make a big decision. On the other hand, a lot of women voted for Donald Trump. Go explain that one to me.
Yeah, great point. Vera?
Yeah, I mean, this is a super important issue for a lot of women. And I think in some of the neighborhoods where there was great fear that women voters had moved away from sort of the independent women voters in the suburbs, had moved away from the Democrats and sort of worried more about economic opportunities and school-related policies, I think this is one of those issues where you could bring a lot of women back into the fold for Democratic votes. So I think this is a fundamental issue for Democrats to pursue. Along with, you know, maybe a story we'll look at later related to Stacey Abrams, the running for Georgia governor. I think, the two issues that I think would be very important for Democrats would be the whole issue related to Democratic voting rights and the issue of Roe v. Wade. Those are the two fundamental issues where a lot of women voters would coalesce around the Democratic ticket.
Judy, go ahead.
You know, I say, but I agree with you and Alan. But are people going to be able to get out and vote? Have the rules changed it already in so many states that it's going to be much more difficult for their votes to count? That's very concerning.
Judy,
yeah, this decision will likely come down next June. Just a few months before the midterm election, and it will gut Roe versus Wade. It will be bad for Republicans and good for Democrats. The question is, can Democrats capitalize on that while also focusing on other issues that are of concern to people? Can they do more than one thing at once? And sometimes Democrats don't do that well. They need to, and as Ira raises the issues about changes at the state level in terms of voting rights, that's still a major issue. And again, I have not seen the Democrats to date be effective in countering that. And also, it's pretty clear what's going to happen with Roe v.ersus Wade. They don't need Democrats don't need to wait until June to start capitalizing that and get the message out to people for whom this will be the key issue. They will vote one way or another based on this issue.
And Democrats rarely speak with one voice. And while we could say that's about democracy and that's healthy and all the rest, on issues such as this, when the Democrats are sending out split messages or they're not able to agree among themselves. And on the other side, you have the right wing, which does speak of one mind, generally speaking, has a whole media machine supporting them. It makes it much more difficult, if not impossible, for the Democrats to get their messages out.
It's not a motivating issue for Republicans because they've gotten what they want. They will get what they want. Right. There's no need for them to go to the polls. They don't have to worry about the Supreme Court.
If Republicans are fearful that if they don't come out, the Democrats will overrun them, then they would be motivated as well.
Will it have an impact on the candidates? Do you think it will bring different candidates into the fold, meaning perhaps more women?
More women. We've seen that happen before. We'll see what happens going forward. And then there's some key Senate races.
I mean, you saw Stacey Abrams.
Announced she'll run for governor in Georgia. That's what needs to happen. When I was listening to the debates yesterday, I was hoping that there were nine women on that court rather than
nine men. Not men. I know what you mean.
Six and three.
Yeah.
Or at least half and half would have been far preferable.
Mm. All right. Anyone else on that? Okay.
I think a lot depends, Joe. As I said before, I think a great deal is going to depend on what women do themselves as independent political voices, whether they come in and say, okay, I have to listen to these jerky men who are telling me what to do and what I can do and what I can't do, or whether this time I'm doing it for myself. I think that's a real possibility here.
Let's go to... Go ahead, Vera.
Yeah, well, on the issue of women, I think there has to be also some work that needs to be done on expressing some solidarity to women who are not privileged in terms of the economic standing. So for a lot of women, this wasn't very clear. At least I noticed that among some of the younger women, they don't really understand what it all takes to be able to access and afford medical care, including access to abortion services. This is something that has sort of, entered our consciousness within several generations. But I think younger women are just beginning to grasp and grapple with the complications of what this means in the context of realistically seeking out those services. I think that is can't be automatically assumed that all women who are in favor of making access to abortion and health services for women available, that they think along the lines of economic barriers and challenges. And that has to be relearned. By a lot of women.
Can I draw people's attention today to a Billie Jean King op-ed in the Washington Post in which she describes, her decision to have an abortion back when she was playing tennis and her opinion about what women of all ages need to do in terms of standing up for our fellow women. It was a really great piece. It was a very interesting. Washington Post, Billie Jean King.
Great point. All right, let's go to other topics. Actually, I just want a quick letter here from, I think I have it. And there it is. Marty writes, maybe the Democrats will grow a brain and use the demise of Roe as an opportunity to run in health care, especially prenatal care for women. They appear to have completely abandoned the issue and failed to do anything substantive to expand health care in their Build Back Better bill. All right. Moving on to other topics, we go to it was only a matter of time, but that time is now, and Omicron is with us in the United States of America, identified in the state of California. The new variant was found yesterday. From all reports, this was the person, the San Francisco resident who arrived November 22nd from South Africa, began feeling ill around November 25th, immediately got tested for the coronavirus, and immediately presented himself to health officials concerned that he could have the new variant. That was confirmed yesterday. The previously healthy patient who was fully vaccinated with the Moderna vaccine but had not received a booster shot tested positive on November 29th. The person had received a second vaccine dose in August and had not yet reached the six-month marker to become eligible for a booster, according to a state health official briefed on the case. The individual, who is between the ages of 18 and 49, according to the San Francisco Health Department, has mild symptoms that are improving and is in self-isolation. Genetic sequencing was performed by the University of California at San Francisco and confirmed by the Centers for Disease Control. I understand scientists get very excited by this because they say, oh, good, well, it's here now, and then that way we'll be able to study it more. I think many of us look and say, oh, it's here now. Oh, God. You know, there's sort of that difference of the fear of it.
It cast a pall over the holiday weekend without question. All of a sudden, everybody was really excited. We were coming out of the last round of Delta or whatever it is, and now this news came down, and it was a bummer, as we used to say.
Yes, very much so. So now science tries to figure this out as to whether the vaccines work against this variant. Now, the scientists will figure out, as far as boosters, if that is doing enough. In this case, the last shot was in August, and yet it was a breakthrough with this new variant. Is it more contagious than other variants? And of course, the big question is it more deadly than past variants as well?
And the next question, of course, is, are we done? In other words, is this the last variant we're going to see? The answer is absolutely not. We're going to see more. And part of what government, who's supposed to protect people, are going to have to do is figure out a way that we can control not only what we see before us, but what's coming. And that's going to be very hard to do. I keep thinking of that anthill at the bottom of my stairway. There's an anthill, and you want to get them out of there. And everybody's running, all those ants are running around. Well, that's us now. We're all running around.
But the government has sort of found a way in the meantime, which is vaccinations. And that we do know that the vaccinations work. And unlike Lara Logan or Rand Paul or Ted Cruz, I have listened closely to what Fauci has espoused, and I believe him. He seems to me as a straight shooter. He answers questions in ways that we can understand them. And in yesterday's press conference, essentially, he said, "You're all asking great questions, but we don't yet know the answer." And he's not throwing out, the bleach that Trump threw out. He's saying, we've got to be patient, but in the meantime, here's what you ought to do. Get yourself vaccinated, get yourself boosted, and if your kids are not vaccinated, get them underway. That's all they can do until they know exactly what we're talking about.
But you know, Ira, those Republicans hate Fauci.
It's just reprehensible.
It is. It's reprehensible. It's incomprehensible. They hate him with a passion, and that must mean that they know he endangers their negative, stupid message.
Well, and also, I mean, it becomes a lightning rod. Even if you put Fauci aside, you do have I get in trouble if we call them anti-vaxxers, but people who are opposed to the vaccine and are opposed to masking, that if you go that route, then they'll say, well, look, it's not working. The vaccines aren't working. They aren't working. Now, all of us in this room don't believe that, but they certainly do, and that's an argument. So every time you have a breakthrough case, every time you have numbers that go up, especially among the population that has been vaccinated, it's harder to get people with a shot in the arm.
Right. You've got the Republican Party saying that Biden has been a failure because he hasn't been able to control the disease, and at the same time urging their followers not to take vaccinations. So they've made a political calculation here that they're going to risk people's lives all for making Biden look bad and then them getting elected. It's just reprehensible is the best word I can come up with.
So President Biden is supposed to speak today, and he's going to issue some...
1:40 p.m., which we're expected to air live here in WMC.
Good to know, good to know. And so he's supposed to issue a couple of new edicts or orders or suggestions, including testing people when they arrive in the country. But I would argue we need to do more. I mean, you still don't have to be vaccinated to be on an airplane in this country. Let's do that. There's
do you
no,
believe in mandatory vaccination?
I do. I would love to see mandatory vaccination in the local schools and the local town offices and the village offices. I mean, it's effective. The other thing, let's make wearing masks inside public places mandatory. I heard Governor Hochul talking earlier in the week saying, well, people who don't want to wear masks aren't going to wear it if I do a mandate one way or the other. Well, that's not true. I know dozens of people who say, well, I don't, if there was a mandate, I would wear a mask.
Good for you, Judy. So, I subscribe to what you're saying.
So let's be a little more aggressive. I mean, the spread of the virus is worse now here in upstate New York than it has been at any time during this whole thing.
Mm-hmm. No, it's horrible. And you know, go ahead, Vera.
Yeah, well, another thing I would say, I find it quite troubling that it is so difficult to find over-the-counter testing cases right now. You know, people are running from store to store, calling around, trying to do these little tests, and it takes days to track them down sometimes. You have to get yourself on a calling list for certain pharmacies. I mean, that is one of those essential things. You have you're not feeling well. You just want to make sure you don't infect anybody around you if you carry the virus and you're shedding virus. Let's make that available, for Pete's sake. This is just a huge problem in this country.
The president had promised back in the summer that he would work to get the rapid tests available in all pharmacies and available to the people at cost. And that hasn't happened. I mean, I can't find it. If you want to find a test, you really have to search.
Well,
right,
I went to a pharmacy chain and got tested a couple of days before Thanksgiving, and we didn't have a great deal of problem getting an appointment. But your point's well taken. I don't know. I wish I understood the relationship between the stores that are giving these vaccines and the demand. In other words, I presume the stores have got to hire, the pharmacies have to hire more people if they're really going to keep up with everything.
Well, I think we're talking about, is this, there's the two types of test, right? I mean, there's the over-the-counter test, which is what we're talking about, yes?
Right, that's what I'm talking about.
We're talking about the
I was tested right at the
window. Over-the-counter.
Right, yeah. So then the other tests were...
PCR is the longer test.
Right,
yeah.
That takes longer to do. Yeah, I was sitting in the car in a parking lot of a Rite Aid with my nephew waiting for a pink dash not to emerge on the end of a stick. And I said to him, first of all,
you're not
men,
pregnant.
First of all, men didn't used to have to worry about this.
Right.
And two, now I hope this is the only time that you're staring at a stick like this and praying that dash doesn't appear.
A lot of stories to tell.
Yeah, it's really something. Okay, let's go to we just have a moment or two, but I want to when you think about this, I mean, especially with we have a letter from Ryan who says I was just in Illinois where they still have indoor mask mandates for everyone regardless of vaccination status. Even in rural downstate areas where voters tend Republican, people were observing the mandates. In other words, mandates work. This is what I was going to say about New York City. I mean, we know that if you go to New York City, that the first of all, the numbers are much lower than they are upstate. We also know that it's just expected, but you used a word earlier, which is that it's you enforce it. It's enforced, and it's you make sure that it's actually, and I'm pointing to Judy now, that it's actually enforced, which you don't see as you go north in the state.
All masks are off in Washington County. I can and Joe and I and my sister Jen and you are wearing our masks, but it's just uniform. Consistently, people are not wearing masks again.
Well, I was at JFK yesterday dropping off my son. Now, I didn't go in the terminal, but I didn't notice anybody wearing a mask at the drop-off point. Mm. Maybe because you're outside, they didn't have to, but I didn't see any signs. Now, again, I was dropping off people not really looking that closely, but...
I mean, the talk of... I understand mandating is a politically fraught issue, but if you're a leader, you have to stand up and do what's right. And at this point, mandates are what's needed. This is a pandemic. People are continuing to die. 1,000 people a day die. Don't tell me that more people die of heart disease. It's true. But an additional, 644,000 people have died over the last year and a half because of this virus.
All right.
I live in the Hudson Valley, and I have to say every single store in towns in the Hudson Valley has a sign that says, do not enter the store without mask. Protect yourself and protect our employees. So the Hudson Valley has been quite good about masking.
That's not universal, though, Vera. I mean, I was in a store the other day, and I didn't see a sign. I was prepared to put on a mask because I figured they were going to force me to put on a mask, and they didn't have a sign one way or the other. So, I mean, it's tough to generalize.
So maybe
that.
It's in the towns that have a lot of visitors from the city, maybe. It's in, not in tiny towns, but in reasonably sized towns. I saw a lot of signs.
Well, Ulster County has declared a state of emergency.
Yeah, Ulster County's numbers are really bad. As are Albany saw a real spike over the last 2 days as well, which is very troubling. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We'll finish up with our group this morning, Alan Chartok, Judy Patrick, Ira Fussfeld, and Vera Karyos-Kelly. We will continue with the group. We welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org. Last call on the letters panel at WAMC.org. We'll be back after this news from the BBC. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable for this Thursday morning. It's the 2nd of December, and we welcome you, or we welcome you back to the program, depending on when you started to tune in. Alan Chartok, Judy Patrick, Ira Fussfeld, and Vera Akarius-Kelly making up the panel this morning. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. I'll say this again. I said it before. I'll say it again. We got a ton of letters this morning. We are only able to read a portion of them. We get to as many as we possibly can, but... So if you're mad at us, I'm really sorry, but we're going to try to I have about three more than I want to read on the subject of abortion, and then we're going to move on to another topic. All right.
As the landlord I know who thinks he owns me, he lives in the neighborhood. And,
A landlord.
I know.
Okay.
He lives in the neighborhood, and he said to me, I wrote a letter and you didn't read it.
Yeah.
What's the matter with you?
Now, there's a difference between us reading it and reading it on the air. That's the other thing.
Well, there is that.
Yes.
But I got quite annoyed with this fellow.
I understand. Joanna writes to us and says, underlining the abortion issue is the unspoken belief that the anti-abortion advocates have about wanting men to be able to have sex whenever and with whomever they wish, but believing that women should have sex only within marriage and always for procreation. Women who choose to be sexual when unmarried or when they don't wish to become pregnant are to be punished with carrying babies to term and being financially responsible for them over a lifetime. If this were not true, anti-abortion believers would be supporting free access to birth control and also funding the prosecution of 100% of deadbeat dads who walk away from paternity obligations and 18 years of child support payments.
Great letter.
Vera, what were you going to say?
No, I agree. I mean, this is a good letter.
All right. We go on to Rick, who says, I'm all for mask mandates, but as a former small business owner, the question I have to ask is not being asked in your current conversation is who will enforce it. The 21-year-old kid at the door of the bar? I doubt it. We need a cultural shift. I just returned from 3 weeks in Italy and everybody wore masks and there was no questions asked because as a democratic socialist state, people there believed in the greater good. But the letter writer is absolutely right. If the difference between being in New York City, when you're walking around New York City, you were expected. Nobody's giving anybody any lip because it's expected. There's a mandate. It's expected.
But not in Greenwich.
You come out. Well, not, I mean, or Albany or Loudonville or Poughkeepsie or
And by the way, I believe I read that it's only a 1% infection rate in New York City. 1%, which is a lot less than most of these other places.
Right, and a mandate would help with that.
Yes,
because a lot of people will say, well, it's not required. Why are you telling me I have to wear a mask? But I have found that when I see someone in a store ask someone to wear a mask, most people will slip one on. At least mm-hmm. that's what happened in the height of the pandemic. But now the culture, the norm is not to wear a mask.
Well, the store that I go to.
So I wanted to make a.
Okay. Ira, you started first.
It was just an anecdote.
Okay.
I was just going to say the store that I go to do most of my food shopping says you don't have to wear a mask if you've been vaccinated. So, but nevertheless, most of the people, including me, wear masks in the store.
And what is it in Massachusetts? Your numbers are going up quite a bit.
So what is the question? What is it?
Well, I mean, what do you find?
What's the mask rule?
The mask rules?
Well, every store that I go into, including the Guido's, the Big Y, and, you know, and the Coop,
the co-op.
Yeah, which I do
visit. Coop is where you get your chickens.
I do often, but the Big Y has them also.
All right, well, what's the rule? Whatever.
Okay, Fire Island. Okay, what the rule is that everywhere I go, it says masks, please, on the front door.
Yeah. But are people wearing them inside?
Oh, yeah, well, it depends.
Oh,
now this is interesting. Do you want to hear something that's interesting?
Yes.
Without naming names, if you go into the Guido's, there's a name, which is upscale place.
Yeah.
Very wealthy people go there.
All right, I'm not interested yet. Keep going.
Everybody's wearing a mask.
Oh.
Yeah.
You see?
Oh, it's.
But if you go into an institution which does not mandate the mask or which is careless about it, not so much. So maybe there is an economic differential here. That happens. Now, that doesn't mean if you go into the Big Y, you don't see people with masks on. I know I have mine on. A lot of people do, but some people don't.
Is the Big Y like a YMCA? What are we talking about?
The Big Y.
It's also where the treasure was buried, and it's a mad world. No, that was a Big W.
Yeah, you're right.
It's the Big Y.
So,
and it takes a "the," as everything in Great Barrington does.
But, you know,
so I wanted to make a comment on Italy, though, you know?
Go
because
Italy.
We started out talking about cultural changes, and we all have to remember that Italy was one of the countries that went through the horrific early phase and had high rates of death prior to the availability of the vaccine.
Yeah.
And Italians remember that because it's a smaller country. People knew people that died at very high rates early on. So Italians are very conscious of that fact. They do not want to have another experience like they went through. And I think this is also in part shaping what's happening in New York City. People are much more cautious. They have a closer relationship with people who actually suffer. And I think this is harder to find in upstate New York or places where there's a lot more space and not everybody might know somebody who has become gravely ill or even died.
The worst,
and I think that makes a huge difference.
The worst that we have seen, and let's just take Berkshire County as an example.
Okay, please.
Berkshire County is now seeing numbers that are the worst they have been since
That's correct.
January of this year. Those numbers are double, if not more so, than they were 3 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that they're doing anything. What we're seeing, but that's coming through almost in most counties in our listening area. You're seeing those numbers. We've seen it in Vermont. We have seen it in New York. We've seen it in upstate New York. We're now seeing it in Ulster County. We're seeing it in the Hudson Valley. And, you know, we're talking about fully vaccinated people. That is what a percentage, basically somewhere hovering around 60 to whatever, right? 63%, something like that. Is that right, Judy?
Oh, the percentage of people vaccinated?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, around 63% on average, depending on where you live. And so, you know, yes, it's still primarily among the unvaccinated, but it's surely a lot of people that have had issues have been vaccinated. So, I mean, that I think should fall into this discussion. Also, I mean, I heard a thing that I just don't know why this wasn't all over the news. And I know we're part of the media, but More people have died so far. This was on Thanksgiving. More people had died in calendar year 2021 with vaccine for most of the year than died in 2020 without a vaccine.
I saw the
very
same story.
Scary.
I saw the same story. And the other thing to watch for, the
hospital. We're still seeing 1,000 a day.
Right.
People
and the
die.
Hospitals are filling up. Last week, Glens Falls Hospital issued, they're concerned. Their beds are filling up. And that was one of the key indicators when Andrew Cuomo was in charge as governor. And, you know, remember we had the gauges and we were opening things up and shutting them down. I'm not even sure anybody's looking at that anymore.
No.
Well, we need something needs to be done.
Shouldn't the governor be doing something about that?
I would like New York's governor to do something as well as Massachusetts governor. I mean, or somebody. I mean, apparently, they
don't counties
like
have a lot of stake in this game and could do a lot.
School districts could do it.
Absolutely.
I mean, they're having winter concerts. They're having winter plays. The people are getting together, playing basketball. They're playing football.
Wives are getting on the train and going out of Great Barrington and going down to New York. You know.
I ask who? Who would do that? Who? We have 5 minutes left. Let's move on from talking about abortion and disease and talk about Chris Cuomo. After months of unease, CNN moved to suspend Cuomo when confronted with documents. The word I love in this story is it's frequently used in the Washington Post story. It is also used in the New York Times story about this. It is used several times in the Variety story about this, which is the unease that permeates the halls of CNN. Now, what I don't quite understand.
In other words, who's going to take the rap?
Yeah, because you have a lot going on here. You have Jeff Zucker, who is
friend of,
but also is going to be moving as far as being the boss of the place, right? And then has stood up for this guy, and then they find out that it's worse than they thought it was, meaning in the sense that there was more information that they did not know, or at least that they claimed they did not know.
That's what he said.
And so by that, then Chris Cuomo gets on and said that he is embarrassed by it.
Well, he's lucky he's still working, and I don't
they
know
say
whether
he's not working. They indefinitely suspended him.
Yeah, but I think he's still getting paid, though, right?
And we don't know if he's being paid. And we don't know whether he's eventually going to be fired, but he ought to be more than embarrassed by
my favorite word in the story, Joe, is indefinitely.
Yes. Well, indefinitely.
Indefinitely suspended.
Now, if you
that
have.
Means forever, doesn't it?
Let me ask this group that was just doing the media project moments ago. Vera and I will listen on. But in our 3 minutes left, we have. No, I forgot what I was going to say. No, you have. God, what was I going to ask?
You were going to ask. You say, I forgot.
I caught Alan's eye, and I forgot what I was going to say.
First of all, the people at CNN.
Oh, no. Brian's, this is for the media project people. Brian Stelter of, CNN.
CNN Reliable Sources.
Reliable Sources.
Formerly New York Times.
Said.
I don't like that program.
He'll be back on CNN by January.
I hadn't heard that, and that means that he's getting roughly a month suspension, and we can argue whether that's enough.
That was his opinion.
That's his opinion.
But is that a, you know, you wonder, well, is that a, I mean, he works at the same place. Is that an informed opinion?
Could be.
Yeah, Brian's a good media media columnist, but I think he's soft-pedaled.
I'm not crazy about
his. He's soft-pedaled this a little bit.
Because
he works for the same network.
Exactly.
And let's say CNN, which is supposed to be an information-gathering network, did not do much information-gathering on what Chris Cuomo did when they first talked to him about this last summer.
Because they didn't want to, right?
Well, you would think that they would want to vet this, and wouldn't have been caught.
With their pants down.
I'm not saying that.
Cuomo,
but
Cuomo went. Initially, Cuomo went to Zucker and admitted what he had done, but it turned out that he didn't admit all of it. And so Zucker more or less gave him a pass. And then the second time, when this release of the documents the other day, the shortcomings of Cuomo's journalistic ethics became much more clear. And on top of that, because Zucker saw that Cuomo had not been straight with him from the beginning. And I don't know about Jeff Zucker, but I, as a CEO, would have been pissed about that as much as I was about the journalistic ethics. I stood up for you, tell me that you, but you didn't tell me the truth.
You know, and if you're a journalist and wants to stand up for your brother, you take him fishing, you buy him a beer.
Well, that's
true. You talk to him. You don't do opposition research.
He could have asked for a leave of absence to work with his brother,
right?
And that would have, I think, satisfied most people. I think the unease that you described at CNN is because that they believe that this is further weakening their credibility in the eyes of many Americans.
Well, absolutely,
and rightfully so.
Yep,
and that they've got to cut this guy off.
I know this woman real well who was telling me that the reason they're going to have a lot of trouble is that women like him a lot.
For the wrong reasons, but go.
Well, it is for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
I didn't know whether she was right or not, but, you know, I invite commentary.
For his overt masculinity? Yeah. I mean, I can still remember him going.
You ought to do the show with a T-shirt on.
That's right, Judy.
But his ratings are going down.
His ratings were number three. His ratings were the highest in CNN, but they were still third versus Maddow and Hannity. So they could find somebody else and be third also.
Right. There's plenty of CNN hosts out there.
We don't know what the whole Zucker thing is.
Cuomo's lost all credibility in my view as well. I agree with what you're saying. He should just be gone forever.
Well, we don't know what Zucker's investment was, right? It could have been in his investment in this relationship.
He came from ABC, brought him along with him.
He's a loyal employee.
And he had Cuomo, who was the governor of New York, who some people might want to curry favor with, you know what I mean?
But to Zucker's credit, he has now acted, and there's a good chance
his hand got put in the fire, Ira.
We'll leave it there. Thank you all very much. We'll be back right after this.